Mr. Webb, reel 8.
Well, then you talk about rats. I was on the Yser Canal in Belgium, and there was a little terrier dog. Where he came from, I wouldn't know. But all I know was this much, that they got there one day, and I thought somebody used to, couldn't get at the rats because they were in holes in the side of the canal bank, you see. So I went back to the guns, which we were not allowed to do, 60-pounders, and I got some bags of gun cotton. Well, the bang gun cotton would explode, but you could light it and it would flare and blow. So I went and got these sticks of gelignite,
Gelignite?
Gelignite.
I thought you said gun cotton.
Well, no, not gun cotton. Gelignite was the word. It was explosive. Look what they used to put behind the guns. The gun cotton was what used to go in behind the charge. I did say gun cotton, I quite agree, but it was wrong. It was sticks of gelignite. And we used to get them, put them in the hole, in some of the holes, and stop up a lot of the holes if we could, but it was impossible to stop them up, and light it with a match. And it used to blow all the holes, and as they come out, this little terrier used to catch hold of them and fling them up in the air and kill them.
Do you remember any other incidents involving rats?
No, that's only two that I could... Oh, well, of course, there was always plenty of rats around, but I mean to say rats were very, very, well, prevalent. I mean, there was everywhere. Hmm. And I mean to say that that was one of the drawbacks of that sort of thing, which yes. You couldn't alter.
Fine. presumably, with the problems of rats and lice, you would have pretty strict regulations about keeping the trenches fairly clean.
Yes. When we were holding the trenches, we used to have some officers. We used to have a brigadier there. He was very, very... He used to come up in the trenches very often. And he was very pelly with the men. He used to come up and say, well, good morning, my men. How are you? Have you had a good night? Or have you had a busy night? Or whatever might happen. And his slogan was, keep smiling and kill Bosch. And I forget his name now, but anyway, he was a very efficient brigadier.
Yeah, was much attention paid to keeping the trenches clean?
Yes.
What arrangements?
Well, when there was any possibility of the mud drying up, the men used to have to use the shovels that was provided there to throw the mud out from the bottom. And then, of course, from a point of you're thinking probably of hygiene for toilet.
Yes.
Well, you see, in the early stages, men had to use shallows and whatever they could do. Well, then you see, when they were holding the line, because, of course, when we were attacking, we were there and gone. We never saw any more about that. But anyway, in this case, they used to, if this was the wall of the trench, they used to dig back in like that, make a square, and fix a proper bucket and a seat. And anyone that was found not using it was, of course, naturally on a crime. And we used to have what they call proper sanitary men.
What was their job?
Their job was nothing else. They knew the way to fire a rifle. They went through all their training, but their job was to empty these buckets every night at dark and bury it. Well, that was very nice, but oftentimes it used to get a shell down in there and explode the lot. So that's one of the pleasures of the trenches. But they used to do the job very... The hygiene principle of when you're holding the line was very strict. I mean, you weren't allowed to pollute the trenches in any other form. You had to use that, that toilet, such as it was.
During the winter, you arrived in France in the winter. What particular problems were created for you by the cold weather?
Well, 1916 was one of the coldest seasons they'd had in this war.
Yeah.
And we used to, we had frost and snow approximate 3 months. In succession in 16, and we used to lose more men with casualties from lumps of dirt, lumps of frozen dirt, than we did from the actual shell shrapnel.
How do you mean lumps?
Well, because you see, when the mud was, when it was all mud and holes and water, the trench, the shells used to bury and explode and blow up a lot of dirt with it. You see, but when it was frozen, which it was in them days of 3 months, frost and snow, the shell couldn't bury. It would just blow up the great chunks of dirt like that and, well, knock a man over for six. I mean, it was just a matter of he was, I've seen fellows had, well, knocked clean out, killed, entirely killed by when the shell come over, and a great lump of dirt had been blown up because, you see, the shells couldn't bury. When they were, it was soft. I mean, you see now on some of the television, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, about I that. See. Any other particular problems which the cold...
No, the only thing was we were short of water there and in that particular time, and we had to thaw snow out the best job we could drink the water. You know, get the snow, because it snowed, you see. Well, I'll tell you how much so it snowed the trenches. It filled the trenches up. We were throwing the snow out, and the drifts were blowing it back in as fast as we were throwing it out, and the Germans were doing likewise. Mm. I mean, they had no alternative, because you see, they may be 20 yards away, they may be 200 yards away, their front line.
Was frostbite a problem?
Oh, dreadful. Dreadful. I was in Abbeville Hospital, and I saw men there. I know it was possible, because, I mean, you see now, you talk of frostbite, men's feet were in water and all that frozen snow and what have you. And we, the officer in charge would come along and say, well, look, now take off your men off duty, I'm talking about, they're not on the fire step.
Yes.
They just sit down and he said, well, take your socks off and rub in whale oil. Now, whale oil was a lubricant which repelled water. But if you know, your feet used to get... Have you ever seen anybody like they used to have years ago washing clothes and your hands all get wrinkled? You know what I mean? All wrinkled up with water and soap. Well, your feet used to get like that through being encased in water. And if you wasn't, if your socks weren't taken off, wrung out and put on a different pressure, your socks would grow into your feet. And the frost would be so much so that men just lost their, well, reason as regards the, they could hardly feel, they couldn't feel their feet.
You were going to tell me something that you saw in this connection when you were in hospital.
Ah, well, I was in Abbeville Hospital, number one South African, and I remember there, I saw some men take off their, take them off. They had taken them off. The Red Cross people had done it, coming down in the Red Cross train. And the flesh just shucked off of their feet and left their toes, bones. That's how frostbite suffered from. You know, it's just like pulling your fingers off like that and all the flesh comes off and a form of rotted flesh froze to death. And doubtful whether they would ever, walk properly again. Trench feet, they used to call it.
Yeah.
Well, then you see, we used to have to do this, and if you didn't do it...
Do what?
Rub this whale oil in, which we thought was a foolish thing to do, but I can see now why. Because you had a fresh pressure on your foot, you wrung your socks out, put your wet socks back on again, undone your putties and what have you, and you had to see that it was done too. Because, I mean, see, that was an order.
Mm-hmm. Good, that's fine.
Most distressing thing, trench feet.
One of the things I've heard is that one of the great problems of life in the trenches was that men were always tired because it was never possible to sleep properly. Did you find that?
Definitely. Oh, yes. You could stand up and go to sleep anywhere that much, but you were so weary that you see... People didn't realise shell fire was so intensive that if you did happen to get off, you'd jump with a start because, of course, those great Jack Johnsons they used to put down was tremendous great shells. Well, I mean to say, apart from the explosion, the blackness of the smoke would almost demoralize you. And you see, well, that was a thing that was happening, well, everywhere, because, I mean, say, the Germans used to shell us like we used to shell them, you see.
Which of the various German weapons that they used in trench warfare did you dislike most?
Trench mortars.
Why?
Because you could get nine in the air before the first one pitched. And it was a success. And you see, a shell, when it was sent out of a gun, would come over like that and hit the trench either front or back.
You mean it would come over horizontal?
That's right, yes. Well, a trench mortar goes, it's like a big pipe.
Yes.
And they drop the shell in, and up he goes. And it goes up like that, and it comes down like that. You can see the fuse burning as they come down. And they said that the Germans could get nine in the air before the first one pitched.
Yes.
Well, I wouldn't say I know it, but I mean, regarding the effects of it, was that it was just a succession of explosions. And you see, it came down in the trench and blew the trench outwards.
Yes.
But I'm going to say, more trying what a shell would be, because...
Yes. What other German weapons in addition to the...
Stokes? Well, when I say Stokes, that was ours, Stokes. But, he had Flammenwerfers. That was where they used to blow...
Yeah,
trench mortars.
Okay, fine.
I think...
Now, while you were in France, you spent quite a lot of time in trenches on the Somme front, in the Arras sector, and also around Ypres.
Yes.
Did you find that the conditions between those three areas varied very much?
Yes, conditions, I should say yes, because unless it was when we were attacking at Arras, when that April attack was on, of course that was very, very demoralizing because, as I say, I should say ye.
Why?
Oh, the devastation was beyond words. I mean to say, all round Passchendaele and places like that is absolutely... I shouldn't think they could do any more to blowing the country to blazes. It was just a matter of shallows. You had no trenches. It was just a matter of occupying a shallow. I was on Landsmark Station. That was blowed to, well, blazes everywhere. All the places, platforms, everything was all blown upside down, but I had a machine gun post on Landsmark Station. That was on the Passchendaele front, which was one of the most dreadfulest places I think I ever was in. Passchendaele. That was on the Ypres front. Because I was at Hellfire Corner.
Mm.
That was another very trying place.
Yes.
But I should say Ypres itself.
What were the differences between the Somme, Arras, and the Ypres sectors? You said Ypres was the worst. Were there noticeable differences between them? Or was one trench...
Well,
was
no,
a trench anywhere?
Actually, the Ypres front, you see, never really was trenches, no more than they were trenches in the early stages of Mons and like that was blown to blazes, but... Ypres was more of a place that was absolutely destroyed. I mean, I don't think it could have been blown any further in regards to the devastation of the places and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
Trees, woods, you see, all blown flat. Well, you did get some stumps of some of these places like Havrincourt Wood and all these other woods that we was around. But I should say Ypres in any form.
We talked mainly about conditions in the front line when you're at Le Transloy in particular. How did life vary once you got out of the line, when you were at Le Transloy, for example?
Well, we would come out to a rest point when we was we weren't really out of the line. We were still allotted to that part. I mean, our battalion and army corps would stop there till such times that they had come out for a real rest, you see. But we did come back for a rest battalion rest, as I might say, to a place called Mehalt. And we used to...
Right. How did life in the rest area vary between front line? I mean, for example, accommodation. Where were you accommodated?
Well, we were accommodated in barns and any place that the French could let the British Army have, evidently. We were not in any form of billet, no more than we were accommodated in barns, you see.
Yes. What about food? Was that improved?
Ah, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, then when we came back, you see, they'd have plenty of music with the band. What I mean, the band, you would have to...
What about food? Did that improve?
Food, yes.
In what way?
Oh, yes. Well, we'd get stews. We'd get nothing unusual, like... Well, I mean, no more than we had the bully beef stews. But we had a better form of tea and all that sort of thing. And your rum would be put in your tea. Where up in the trenches, you see, you'd get it given to you in spoons. Just spoonfuls, so many spoonfuls of neat rum.
Would it be usual in the rest areas to have breakfast, dinner and tea?
Yes.
It would?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, it was more regulated like that, you see, because... I mean, say we were out for a rest, and then we was on training for any special do that might come off, you see. There was always plenty of training attached to it.
Yes.
Oh, yes, we'd have regular meals in any form. I mean, say, when we were out at rest. And we would get probably, might have a bit of bread then.
Yes.
We might get four in a loaf. We might get eight in a loaf.
When you weren't on duty... What kind of social and recreational activities
at
did
rest?
You enjoy? Yes.
Well, no more than we just simply went out on these training stunts for the day, like they would do if you was in training at home. You trained for so long, then they'd bring you in. You'd have your tea, and the rest of the evening was left for you to just wander about and do what you like in the French villages amongst the... population.
So what did you do?
Well, we used to just wander around and converse with the French people general routine of, talking about the different things, about where their own men was gone to the war and so on.
Yeah.